Okay, before I do the talk, I will, as always, take a picture of a happy, smiling audience. I do this at the beginning because that's when they're actually happy and smiling. And so what I'll do is I'll get this part of the room, happy and smiling, close enough, and then this part, and then I'll stitch a wonderful panorama together and put the whole thing on www.robmiles.com. Anyone got a robmiles.com? Oh, there's a few stalwarts. Anyone here last year for the Connect talk? Yeah. Yes. It wasn't my finest hour. But I will say that the talk the following day, all my Connect demos worked. Yes, both of them. Okay. I've made a list of emergency jokes, and I've got up to 9 jokes, so even if the demos go wrong, I'm okay. I know one of them isn't going to work because I haven't got any networking down here. That's my own fault for wanting to bring my Surface Pro out, which doesn't have a network connection that is on a piece of wire. So I've kind of self-sabotaged already. My name's Rob Miles. I'm going to speak. Is it quarter past yet? Are we good to start? Yeah, I think we're good to start. The clock's going now. I've only got 74 minutes and 55 seconds. Ooh, scary. I'm going to talk to you for 74 minutes and 50 seconds about Windows Phone agents' secrets. The quick show of hands, how many Windows Phone developers have we got here? Okay, how many folk here, just to see if I'm going to foul up again? Oh, no hands at all. That's cool. Oh, one or two going, maybe. What I want to talk about today is the business of actually, why doesn't that move? What's happening? Presenter media mode. Thank you. This is one of my treasured possessions. I don't have many. And the fact this is really small and cheap tells you a lot about me. This is a mouse with a control on the back that I can use to change the slides. I want to talk about Windows Phone 8 specifically. How you can get more than one thing happening at once, what the possibilities are, and how you can add value to your Windows Phone apps by making things run in the background. And so we're looking at how we're going to manage the tasks, how we do the multitasking, how we make these things in Visual Studio. My little red dot is very poor. Look at that. That's rubbish. I want a bigger one. Oh, that's not fair. Anyway, I'll walk across here and point at them because I've got long arms, I can do that. So we're going to talk about the whole business of making tasks in Visual Studio and how to actually get background tasks in the phone. And then we're going to stop and you're all going to clap and go away happy and fill me with glowing reviews. And then I'm going to go and lie down somewhere in a bath of custard face down. But that's just me. You might not do that. I might not do that. We'll have to see how it goes. Background agents. These are agents that run in the background. Okay? not giving too much away there. This is, normally speaking, phones, as you know, one thing at a time. There's one application running in the foreground. There might be other applications in the background actually sitting in memory waiting to be woken up. One of the things that Windows Phone 8 does rather well is fast application switching. And so your application can be sat there and it can come to life real quick because it's basically just waiting to be activated and off you go. So you might have lots of apps sitting in memory, but they'll be shut down. They'll be effectively asleep. And this is all to do with best battery life, best user experience, and it served the Windows Phone very well because it means you can get a really good user experience on a phone that costs €150 to buy, and the smaller Nokias are like that, and they are really, really nice. And so the good news is, yeah, good performance, good battery life, but you can't have things happening in the background, and some people miss this. And what this is looking at from that point of view is how we do the background agent story on Windows Phone. Now, the way it works is that you can have your application, which is your thing that you're making, usually an app, could be a game. There's no reason why a game couldn't download new levels or new sound effects or new high scores or whatever in the background. There's no reason why a game couldn't go onto a server and check high scores. So if somebody beats your high score on whatever game they're playing, you get told about that, which will incentivize you to play again. There's no reason why you couldn't do that kind of stuff with a game. It's just that most of the time, the things I've seen tend to be app-driven. There are basically two flavors of background app. There's periodic task and resource-intensive task. You can make one that's, you can make one of each, or one that does both, or just one. And I'll talk about exactly what they are in a few minutes, so it'll all make sense. Please note the bottom bullet point is terrifically important. An agent is not equivalent to a foreground application running in the background. So we're not talking about a situation where your app just ticks over in the background. It's a totally distinct and separate piece of code. And it's built that way as well. And so it's limited in terms of what it can do and when it runs. But the idea is that you don't want people to have a bad experience with the phone where the battery goes flat because somebody's wayward background app has just spent ages polling the network or whatever and killed performance. So we deliberately limit the behavior of these things in terms of what they can do. And that's absolutely fine. That's how it should be. But you can work around that and you can still add value. This slide's got red at the top. that's nice. We must regard the background app, background agent, as a nice piece of icing. The health warning here is basically the Windows Phone operating system restricts how many background apps you can have at any given time. And if you go into battery saver mode, where the system's trying to eke the maximum possible life out of the battery because it's running a bit low, in that situation, background apps don't get to run at all. So in these situations, what that means is that your background app could actually be clobbered or not get a chance to run for some considerable time. So you really must make sure that the background app is a piece of icing, not a piece of the cake. It mustn't provide fundamental behaviors that your solution needs. Users can also kill them. I'll show you that in a minute or two. You can actually go on to the background tasks setting, and you can disable and enable particular applications to allow them to run in the background. So the bottom line is here, you don't base your core application behavior on a background agent, because if you do that, then it's quite possible the user could break it just by killing it off or letting the battery run low. A little bit of nomenclature. A task is the thing. I wish my dot was bigger. I've said that before. Moving on. A task is a scheduling type that you request when you get the background agent to run. And the operating system looks after this. And like I said, that there are two kinds of tasks. The agent is the actual code behavior that you put in there. And the agent code is written in this class that derives from background agent. And we actually build these things using Studio. There's a little template, and I'll actually show you how that happens in a minute or two. So we've got this idea that we're going to fire this thing off and leave it out there. And every now and then, when the system gets bored, there's not much going on, it'll look round through the list of background tasks and maybe let one or two of them have a go. Periodic tasks get to run, every now and then. Around 30 minutes, generally speaking, depending on loading on the phone. I've had ones run more often than that. I've had ones take a bit longer. If you've got lots of background tasks going, then you might take a bit longer to get your turn. And so the idea is that the system fires your task up, lets it run for around 25 seconds or so, gives it 6 megabytes of memory, which doesn't sound a lot, but you can actually get quite a lot done in that. And the phone actually will let a certain number of these things go. So for things like polling background services, location tracking, tile updates, these things are great. So if you have like a weather ticker or a stock ticker, and you want to update a tile on the screen in the background as the user does other things, then this kind of thing works really well. And it's actually quite easy to do. So that's periodic. The other guys are resource intensive. And the sort of clues on the tin here. If your phone's on the mains and the battery's nicely charged up and we've got a nice network connection and the phone's not being used, the lock screen's up, then we can fire these things up. And these things get a lot more access. They can actually do a lot more for longer. And so they can do sort of some quite sort of serious stuff. We can have up to 10 minutes worth of execution. Points to bear in mind, if your background task tips over twice in a row, it will get put to sleep forever until the user re-enables it. So try and make this stuff behave itself. So if you have things crashing with exceptions and stuff, then in that situation, after a while, your app will get knocked on the head and quite right too. So resource-intensive agents are just allowed to run and do stuff. These are good for things like bringing down new versions of the dictionary or the catalog, compressing stuff, pushing back logs, all that kind of stuff. Because when this thing fires up, you know you've got a good network connection, and you know you've got the full processor to go at. And so you can do a fair amount of work in the background in your resource-intensive agent, and off you go and do that. And yeah, it all just works. If you want to, you can actually make a single agent which does both. And this can either be a single background agent that you bind twice to the different kind of tasks, or you can actually have separate ones that run in parallel when they need to. The agent itself can figure out when it wakes up, what am I being? Am I resource intensive or am I just periodic? And then it can behave accordingly. So we can do all that, and it all works splendidly well. Emergency joke. Yeah. I went out with this girl who works in London Zoo. She was very nice. I think she might be a keeper. Does that actually work in Dutch? Does that actually work in Dutch? Yeah, okay, right, fine. Okay, we'll go with that. Okay. I have got others. We'll go on to those. That's quite nice. All right, anyway, yeah. Actually, there's a friend of mine. He started going out with a girl who's got x-ray eyes, but I've no idea what she sees in him. That better? Okay, right. I'm just finding my level here. Okay, yeah. Right, let's get back to the plot, because you didn't... Maybe you did come for the jokes. Who knows? If you did, I've got bad news for you. Right, so... When agent starts, it fires up, starts doing stuff. Now, the stuff that an agent can do is restricted again. Now, again, name of the game is good user experience. Don't want to have stuff happening they can't understand. Don't want to have resources suddenly being pulled away from foreground tasks. So you can't use the camera. You can't use XNA. You can't draw on the screen directly, although you can pop up toast notifications. You can change the content of tiles. You can't use the microphone and the camera. That would be terrible. You can't use the sensors. I would like it if you could read the accelerometer. That would be kind of interesting to me, because you could kind of do some kind of funky orientation type things on that, but you can't. So it's not there. And you can't play audio. There is another kind of background task that does actually play audio for you, which I'll talk about right at the end, but you can't make any kind of sound. You can pop up toasts, and we'll be doing that in a minute or two. So you can do tiles, toast, location, network. You can talk to the added storage. You can do sockets. And most of the framework stuff that's useful, you can just pile in there and use. It's kind of interesting, because you are running, your background task is running in parallel with your foreground task. Okay? It isn't an either or. So what you have to be careful of if you're using ISO is that the background and foreground tasks don't get into a kerfuffle with each other and start fighting over resources. So you have to use mutexes to make sure that doesn't happen. But the point to bear in mind is that, yeah, it's a separate thread, it's a separate task, but it could run in parallel with the foreground one, and we'll see that in a minute or two when I do a demo. There's a thing called location log, and it's a program. I'll put all the demos and everything, slide decks, the whole lot, maybe not the jokes, on robmiles.com, so you can download this stuff and play with it. But I made a little location logging program, and the idea is that this thing runs in the background and tracks the location of the user and just logs it into a little text file. And you can see here I've been running it for a while in my office, which is at that particular amazing location. That's Hull, which is up the country. It's quite close to the Greenwich Meridian, so that one's quite a small number. And it's quite a long way north, so that one's quite a big number. I don't know how these things work. Anyway, that's Hull. That's my office, okay? And I did that yesterday, or whenever it was. And what my program does is whenever it runs, it basically drops out another one of these location information elements. And so I can track where I've been in case I forget. which a few years' time... very useful to me, or perhaps dangerous, who knows. Anyway, it gives you a feel for how this works and how you're going to use it. And so the way you do it, very simple. We start up with our main application project, and we hit the add to it. And what we add is from one of these templates. And they're a bit hard to read on the slides, but basically there's a template for each kind of agent you're going to make. And so the thing fires up, it basically builds you the code that you need. And so now I have a solution file that contains two projects. This is my logger, which is the actual program that the user's running, which has the foreground, the buttons, the XAML, and that's my agent, which is the background thing. So now I've got two separate projects. And the only fiddly bit, which you have to do, is you effectively have to make one of the projects import the other one. So in my location logger, I've actually got to bring in the agent. But that's just, if you have two projects, you would do that anyway. So you bring in the task agent as a reference, and at that point, the two things are aware of each other. And at that point, you can now build the solution, and you get both. And if you deploy it, then you've got your background agent sitting in memory, and you can fire it up and start it ticking, and it becomes part of the OS, and the user can see it and manage it and all that good stuff as well. So that's how it all hangs together. In terms of the background agent code, well, we have effectively an extension of the scheduled task agent class, and the interesting thing here is basically we just put code into onInvoke. So this method will get fired every time that our task gets woken up. And the most important thing actually is don't forget to leave that method in. If you take that away, then your application, your background thing never actually tells the system I'm finished now. And so it might get it'll get killed with extreme prejudice after about 25 seconds or whatever. And so you just go into to-do, and you put the code in there to do the background work. And that's how it hangs together. And it all works terribly well on that basis. This was the kind of thing which I did. So I've effectively got a little message action going on. I have a method called load log from ISO storage file. The log for me is just a big lump of text. If you use Windows Phone to develop applications, each app has two ways it can store stuff. There's like a dictionary, which you can pop name value pairs into, which is good for things like settings, and an ISO file store, which is basically a chunk of file space, which you can use how you like, create directories, store files, structure it how you want. And the application has access to both of these things. The particular version of the code that I wrote just uses a file, opens a stream, and pushes a string out into it. And then reads it back again afterwards. And so what I say is, if I've got a log and it's all good, then I'll set the message string to loaded. And if I haven't got a log and nothing's come up, then I'll say, it's the first time you're running me, I've been initialized. And so at that point, we then go away and start doing stuff. I've made a mutex, a mute object, which effectively wraps around my fetching from the ISO store method. So I'll wait on the mutex, so it's okay to go in, and then I'll basically read the log file inside my try, and then that sets log text to whatever came in off the file. If it blows up for whatever reason, I'll set the log to an empty string, and then finally, in my exception, I'll release my mutex so other people can go in there and do stuff. That's because my foreground task is reading this file and displaying it. I don't want the two things fighting over a file. So I pop that in. Like I said, the thing to remember on this is that both the foreground and the background tasks could run in simultaneously if you're not careful. And if you don't put that in, you get some really weird bugs. And I know this because I had some really weird bugs, and I had to figure out why this was the case. And at that point, it got a lot easier. So use my wisdom. I haven't said that before ages. But anyway, steal that idea and just nick this code and do what you like with it. Other thing about Windows Phone 8, which is, I think, better, Windows Phone 7 was very laissez-faire, which is a French word. I think it means do what you like kind of thing. Windows 7 just said, have every single capability you like, my friend. Bang. And so when you make a brand new Windows Phone 7 project, then you got every single ability. You're like Superman. Windows Phone 8 doesn't do that. Windows Phone 8, make a brand new project, you just get a very small subset. And you effectively, if you want to use location, you have to turn it on. So you enable the setting. One of the nice things about 8 is that you've actually got a UI you can do this rather than trying to remember what the XML was to do these things. So you turn that on, and now I can start tracking my location. If you don't turn that on, then what's going to happen is your program won't run, and it'll fail to pass certification. And this is how you get the location. So I make myself a watcher, which is going to be a geocoordinate watcher. I start it running, and then I ask it, hey, where are you? And that's it. You just go and get that, and it tells you where you are. All I do is I basically just convert it into a string with a, you know, on the end, so I can just bung it in my file. But you can do what you like with it. You could put it on a, you can store it in a structure somewhere and bring it back and draw it on a map. That'd be really easy to do. So we're just going to pull this thing out. The way it works, when your little background app asks for position, this doesn't trigger the GPS because we don't want to do that. The GPS is one of the things in a phone that consumes more power than just about anything else. It's very, very heavy on the battery. And so what happens is that the background system samples positions around every 15 minutes or so and caches them. And so when you actually read this back in again, you're going to get an accurate reading to the last 15 minutes or so. That's kind of like in the, you don't know when it's going to run, and you're going to get 15 minutes or so on the position here. That's just because we don't want background tasks to flatten the battery by repeatedly reading position. Does that kind of make sense? Is everyone okay with that? So it's good enough. The other thing which is I found which is irritating, you don't get a position value from the emulator. You know how you can, in the Windows Phone emulator, you can actually move things around on a map and it all looks kind of sweet. That's all fine and dandy for foreground tasks, but for some reason, last time I tried, unless they've changed it, I don't think they have, then you don't get that position information if you're running in a background task. You just get a thing that says you're whatever. true story. A few years ago, we set our students a mobile application to build, and they were basically writing this thing which would make sure they were never late for a lecture. And so the idea was that the system would know where you were and know what time the lecture was, and it would go ping pong and then tell you to start walking 5 minutes away if you were 5 minutes away, and so on, okay? So quite a nice idea. So you'd arrive, you'd just in time for the lecture, you'd walk in through the door. And so we had students given this job to do. It was really fun to watch them testing it, because just about to a man, they all ended up walking around campus going, it's working, it's working. And only about two or three of them sort of went, oh, it's walking around campus is a pain in the butt. I could just fake a whole bunch of geo-coordinates or record a thing once and then just play it back. It wasn't until we told them about this and they all went, oh, yeah. If you ever do this kind of thing, the fact that you don't get anything from the emulation isn't really a problem. Just make a thing here which you can use to fake your positions and then run through it. Please don't do what our students did, which was, I'm at the University of Hull, by the way, best university in the world in Hull. Build yourself. One of my rules is build yourself a nice place to work. And if you're doing location-aware stuff, that means recording a whole bunch of data or faking a whole bunch of data and then feeding it in some way. So for me, the fact that you don't get a location from the background thing is irrelevant, because I'd be faking it at this point. I'd have a conditional compilation bit there which fakes it, because that's the way I roll. I'm basically a fake person. But let's not go there either. So store it. Yeah, just bang it on the end of the string and then save my log. And again, I'm using that mutex so that I don't end up fighting with a loader and sending them duff data. And that's really it. The one thing I do just to go, ooh, I'm clever, is I'll make a toast notification pop up, which just says location log, and then a little message that tells me if I've loaded it okay. And so I get this kind of action going on. Now, I'm showing you the toast notification because it's the quickest one to demo, but you can use this to change the content of tiles. Foreground and background of tiles. You can use it to do all that kind of good stuff as well. It's just that toasts are nice and easy to spot. And are we at demo time yet? Not quite. What you can do, once you've got your, in the foreground, so we've got, here's where we are, okay? The background task is now good to go. It's sitting there. It'll do all the right things. It'll fetch the information, add my position to it, drop it back in a file, all's well with the world. When my foreground app starts up, the background app is sitting there not doing anything until I formally switch it on, which is what this code here does. So this is where I make myself a periodic task. I've set it to an expiration time of 10 days from now, So it'll run for about 10 days before I have to do anything with it. And I effectively, I make sure that I haven't got a task with the same name already. So, and then basically I just fire this thing off and I give it to the scheduled action service and just say, off you go. If I don't find it, I add it. If I do find it, I kill it and then add it back again. So that I've only got one copy in there running and everything behaves itself nicely. So this is effectively how you find a task and then having found it, kill it and make a new one to get things going again, or just make a brand new one and off you go. And that's it. The nice thing about, well, that will be fine, except for the fact this thing runs every 15 minutes and debugging would again be a nightmare. So what I can do is I can actually use a conditional compiler symbol that's set up. When your program's being built in debug mode, this symbol is set to be true, and so I can actually use this extra method, launch for test, and I can say fire it up every 60 seconds. So if I'm running in debug mode, I can get my background agent to kick in every minute or every 10 seconds. 10 seconds drives you a bit nuts. I thought small was good. Small is not good here. About a minute seems to be okay. So what I do is turn this thing on. You could use that symbol to control faking position as well, and then it'll disappear when you go into release mode. Off we go. So now we're going to get an interrupt. And so now I got the template for the slide deck, and it all the demo things have a picture of this guy. I don't know who he is. I have no idea. I'm not convinced he knows he's in this. But you'll see a few of him. And I'm hoping that he's like a happy demo god that's going to make everything work. Because otherwise, it's all going to end terribly. So let's go have a look on my desktop. And like I said, I'm going to give you all this code because I'm that kind of a guy. And I'm going to go find it. It's on my desktop. Oh, go. Alt-tab. Boom. So... yeah, and we'll go have a look in Tech Days, and we'll go have a look in Phone Agents, and we'll go have a look in Demos, and we'll go have a look in Location Logger, and we'll fire it up. Now, this is basically everything you've seen, okay? Once it's got itself into memory, I'll make things a little bit larger so you can see them better. So these are my two, if I just scrunch them up a bit, you can see I've got two solutions, sorry, two projects in my solution. One is my foreground app, and one is my background. And if we look inside the references for the foreground app, we'll find that we've actually got a reference to the task agent. It's very important you do that. Otherwise, if you don't put the reference in, it behaves kind of weird. So if I start my application running, which is the exciting part, fire it up. So we'll get ourselves an emulator in a minute or two. Here it comes. And this will deploy my logging application, which has, I think it's got three buttons on there sitting in the XAML. It'll probably be in super slow mode because I have actually got some more jokes. I can show you the XAML while that comes up. No, that's taking its time. Okay, so it's starting. Yeah. I have to confess at this point that my machine actually tipped over and blue screened. I've got some USB drivers in here which are a bit weird, and when they throw a hissy fit, the whole machine goes bing and gives me the blue unhappy face for Windows 8. And it might actually do that. And if it does, I want a huge round of applause and a cheer just to sort of put one here. I'll show you. I don't care if it crashes. Right, anyway, we're good. So at the moment, the program is running. We have no background task. If I go look at the actual code behind the button, just drift down. Come on. Drift down. Come on. Okay, don't then. Ah, life, eh? Go. And then, okay, when is a scroll bar not a scroll bar? Like now, I think is the answer. Anyway, if you press this button. Oh, come on. Why would, oh, maybe when it runtime. If I press start tracking, it'll basically fire off a process and away we will go. And so now I now have a background process running, and it's actually every minute or so, because I'm in debug mode, it's firing up and getting the location and copying it up into the file. Now, you're not seeing any toast notifications at the moment. Why is that? Why am I seeing no toast? Why no toast, Rob? This is called audience participation. It's going really well. You, Good answer. I wish I had a prize for you, but I haven't. Oh. If your app is in the foreground, you don't get any toasts from the background process. So at the moment, the fact that we've got the location log sitting up there actually trying to do stuff means that we don't get any toast. So if I back out of here and then we talk amongst ourselves for a minute or so, after a while, we'll get the toast message pop up that means that the background task is actually running, and there we go, doing its thing. So that effectively, we've got that thing. That'll pop up every minute or so. In terms of how toasts work, if I click on that, that'll take me back to my application. I was a bit slow, sorry. I'll get it next time. If I now drift back into my app, I backed out, didn't I? So I can't do that. I have to go back into here and go to the location logger and really upset things. Then I've actually got, there you can see that we've actually got a location tracked at 12:45 in the emulator. And the reason that string is there is because my code detects I'm in emulation mode and just puts that message up rather than trying to use a GPS position that isn't valid. So it'll keep on doing that. I'll get no more toast at the moment. I back out again, but that's my background task running away. Let's just start it again. No, let's do something interesting. Let's see if this happens. One of the things which is really nice, if you're wondering how these things debug, I can just slap a breakpoint into the on invoke inside the agent and wait a minute or so, and that breakpoint will fire. So the nice thing about the way this actually works is that I can debug my background agents from within the same project. And so in a few seconds, please work, then we'll get that breakpoint hit, and then I can step through my program and go into the code that I've told you about and actually see it working. So debugging is actually quite easy, and it all happens inside Visual Studio. And this is a huge step up from the earlier versions of the environment, which didn't work anything like as well. I'm wondering, are you going to hit that breakpoint or not? Okay, right. Well, there you go. There's these two lions walking down the middle of Hull High Street, and one says, "It's a bit quiet for Saturday afternoon, isn't it?" Okay, fair enough. It's gone ping, but I've hit the breakpoint. In a minute, I've hit my breakpoint. Come on, come on, come on, you can do it. Come on. Right, I know why. Anyone know why? It's because I actually backed out of the application. If I stop the thing and run it up again. Well, one thing that's interesting, I've killed the app, but if I go into my settings, hello settings, where are you? Boink. And look in applications and background tasks, you will see location logger, and there he is, and he's allowed to run. So the way it works is that as you add application background tasks in, then this list gets bigger. And there's no reason why, if the user's feeling sort of malicious, they can actually sort of clobber the applications. So if I want to, I can sort of block that. So at this point now, that's the end of the background tasks for location logger. So this is the point I made very early on in the talk. If you put a fundamental behavior into your program that needs a background task, and I've just killed your program because now there's no background task running at all. It's gone. So do bear that in mind if we make these things. But as far as we're concerned, this is actually the code which is doing the stuff that you want. It's basically saving my position. One thing which you might find interesting, if you want to ever find out whether or not your phone is running on the emulator, then just look at the device name and pull that out. And if it's X device, it'll actually tell you that you're inside that. That's how I managed to make my message make sense there. And this is basically the demo, and it worked, which is always rather nice. So we'll keep on moving forwards. So what we've seen is the location logging application fires up a background task. It starts running. It'll begin running even when the foreground app is still there, which is fine. And the background task then goes off and fetches the information and stores it. It'll just keep on going in perpetuity. If you're debugging, it'll go ping every minute. Otherwise, it'll go ping every half an hour or so. You can debug it inside Studio. You can put breakpoints in there, step through it. And this is true if you're using a physical device as well. So I can actually, I've put the aging code in here, and I logged my journey home, which is kind of cute, and brought it all back out again and fiddled with it, and it was broadly speaking correct, which is rather good as well. So yeah, it's all fine. Exactly the same techniques work on resource intensive. The mechanism is just the same, just the context in which you fire up is subtly different, that's all. Here we go, background agent tips. Get your foreground app to reschedule your agents at least every 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, any agents that have been running for that long and not been touched by their foreground app get killed off. So if you have a background app, that's why mine searched for it, removed it, and then put a new one in, because that gives me another 2 weeks' worth of execution. Okay, so if you don't reschedule it, it'll get done. Like I said, I keep emphasizing this, do not implement critical functions in a background agent, because the user might kill it and the OS might kill it as well. If you really want to do stuff in the background in a managed way, you have to go off the phone and use push notifications or some kind of mechanism on a machine that isn't the phone and push the data down to it and send toasts that way, which you can do, but it's not really background as such. This stuff is terribly useful for adding value to an app. Just about every app I've ever seen, I've thought, oh, if you could put a little background thing in there to update this or tell the user new stuff's come along or set them new challenges each day or fetch things from a server, new background images, all that kind of stuff. Great for that. Great for adding value. Not so good for core behaviors because you just won't work. One of the tasks which you can do, which I can't demo, I'm afraid, because I'm not on the wire, which I'm sad about. When you use the phone to get stuff from the marketplace or whatever, then the phone itself fires off a background agent to fetch those files. You see them coming down in the loading screens. And what they did was they took that behavior and they basically exposed it as a service that programmers can use as well. This is one of these situations where you can get around the limitations on the maximum size of things in App Store. In marketplace, App Store, hushed my mouth. You can basically get a small loader app to kick up and then fire off a background file transfer to bring down the big stuff and store it in your ISO store. So the idea here is if you have a big file that's part of your app that you need, but you can't deploy it through the application for whatever reason, then you can use a file transfer task to bring it down for you. So the idea here is that you effectively just delegate that thing and we can fetch from HTTP or HTTPS, not FTP at the moment, unfortunately. And the system effectively manages the active transfers. And so it, in the same kind of context as it brings down files onto here, when it can, it'll bring down your files as well. Your applications can search the list of transfers that are running for that app, find them by name, and then query their state. So you can do progress bars if you want. And in fact, the code I've written actually does this. There are some limitations. You can't push more than 5 meg. And I think there's a download limit size of 100 meg. That might have changed, and 20 meg over cellular. There are some transfer preferences you can set to modify this. But you can do as many of these as you want. So you can bring things down in chunks and drop them into ISO store. If you use the file store version of ISO store, you can put as many. You can actually fill the phone up with stuff. You can put as many gigs as you like in there. It's not actually capped in any particular way. So go and get the namespace. Unlike our resource intensive and blah, blah, blah agents, there's no extra messing around with projects or stuff. Bring in that namespace and then make myself a URI and then fire off, build a request, configure it to whether we're pushing or pulling, and then actually set the thing off, set the preferences, and then off we go. Effectively, everything's placed into your ISO store, so you can go off and get it once it's arrived. And this is the bit that starts it off. So basically, I tell the background service, here is my transfer request. I'd like you to actually add that to the list. If it won't let you do it, then you have to catch exception and put a message up that kind of makes sense. Otherwise, you off you go. That's the one which is specific to this. This is the one that's generic, the way the exceptions work. If it is a specific one, I get that useful message. Otherwise, I just get the catch-all. And my transfer now sits in the background doing stuff. And it'll keep on going until it's got the whole stuff downloaded, but the transfer itself will sit in the queue until you go in there and manually remove it. That's because you have to have something to ask whether you've finished or not. That's the next thing we're going to cover. So two things I can do. If I'm the live application, I can bind an event to progress changed. So I can do a progress bar, which is basically just going to fire this method whenever we've got some more data down from our file. And I can actually get a message fired when we go from in the middle of downloading to download complete. Of course, these only apply if your app's in the foreground at the time these events are occurring. If you drop off the front and another app comes in, then the transfer continues in the background, and these things just don't go anywhere until you rebind to them next time round. And there you go. This is what I do in my little program. When I get my changed thing, I just basically update the status block with the amount of bytes received from the host, and then off you go. And it's actually very, very easy to use. This is my transfer status. I've got some, you can't beat magic numbers. I love 200 and 206. If you've got either of those two status codes, then you're a happy bunny. Your file's arrived, all's well with the world, and you've got the thing completed for a good reason, and off you go. And then having done that, you then actually have to clobber the background task and remove it from the list. And if this can throw exceptions if you can't find it, so just catch an exception and throw it away. That's not very elegant. I wouldn't tell my students to do that, but I'll tell you because you're all proper programmers, okay? You're happy with that? That's fine. I'm happy with that. That's good. And that's it. There's that guy again. Now, I can show you the code, but I can't make it run because I need a network connection that my lovely little Surface has not got. And for that, I apologize. I could tell you a joke instead. There's this guy gets a job in a zoo. He's working in the zoo for a while, cleaning up stuff. And one day, the head of the zoo comes to see him and says, "We've got this big problem. You know our gorilla, Gus the gorilla?" And the guy says, "Yeah." He says, "Gus the gorilla has just died." It's not good. And we've got thousands of people coming to see Gus the gorilla. So we have a cunning plan. We have this gorilla suit. What I want you to do is dress up as Gus the gorilla and go in the cage and give it all aha and do all that with the bananas. And that'll keep everybody happy and the zoo will stay in business and you will keep your job. And the guy goes, "Right, okay. Not sure about this ethically, but I'll be Gus the gorilla, why not?" So he puts on the gorilla suit and he's in the cage and he's giving it this and wandering around eating bananas, having a great old time. And it just so happens that his zoo, his cage, the gorilla's cage, is next to the lion's cage, okay? So he's in the gorilla's cage giving it this and that. He thinks, "I'll climb up those bars, that looks like fun." So he gets the bar and he goes on the bar like this, and the bars all go clunk and fall down. And so now he's in the cage with the lions, you see. And so he's lying on the floor when it was going to happen, and the lions are walking towards him going roar, and he starts shouting, "Help, help!" And one of the lions says, "Sure, you're both fired." Was that better than the demo? Yeah, I thought so. Okay, right, fine. So if you want to pull the code down and run it, what it actually does is it fetches a picture from my Flickr site and displays it. And so on the completed event, what I've got is a bit of code that just draws the picture when it's arrived. And so you can use that to background fetch images whenever you like. An application can find out how many transfers it's got active. And if you want to really bottom this out, there's a nice MSDN website which you can go to, which has further details on this. So that's another kind of background task, that's file transfer management, and that actually works quite nicely as well. This is the code that does it, so I can effectively, if I've got some transfer requests, I can then just iterate through them and kill the ones that have finished, let's move on to alarms and reminders. Okay, these are a kind of background task which I find kind of useful. You can create scheduled events that will fire in the future. These are displayed whether or not you're running. And so the idea is that you can just set a thing off to fire off at some time. The notification is displayed and the phone If the user responds to the notification, they can drop back into your application from there and then do more with it. One of the things you might use this for, things like car park timers, where you want to give the guy a warning 10 minutes before his car parking expires or whatever, then fire off one of these reminders, and then the phone will actually go bing-bong when the alarm goes off, even if your app isn't running. So you basically lob these things out there. You can fire them once, or you can configure them to fire at intervals. You can do all that kind of good stuff. In fact, it's extremely powerful. You can make them fire quite a long way in advance if you want. You could make your application remind the user to play the game again or update the status of their artifact or whatever ahead in time. And these are very, very easy to set up. Now, what I've built here is a simple two-page Silverlight application, which basically has a slider, which I can use to set the amount of my egg, starting with a five-minute egg and then going up or down from there. And then when the notification actually fires, we actually get an egg-ready event, which I can then deal with. So this is a very, very simple piece of XAML, an application that goes with it. And here we go. Making the reminder is easy enough. Make a new reminder object. We're using the phone.scheduler service. We set the begin time, which is basically going to be the date time now plus a new time span of however many minutes I'm doing my egg for. The content is the phrase egg ready. I don't want it to recur, just going to go once. And then when I get the event and they navigate through, I give it the XAML page to hit when they touch my reminder. So what this means is that if there is anything you want to remind the user about your application and get them to drop back to a particular status page or whatever, this is how you do it. So when the application comes back, it will actually hit that particular page to push whatever you want in there. Having built the thing, we then just add it to the service, and at that point, whatever happens, we're going to get our reminder fired. If you want to do a bit of housekeeping, you can actually search for the things and remind and remove them. So here I can actually go and find my reminder, and then if it isn't null, I can remove it from the list. So that's what that's a bit of tidying up. And here's that man again. And this one does actually doesn't need a network connection or anything at all. So we can go and do this egg timer. Here we go. So this is just the same code you've seen, and it will work, and you'll all clap like blazes. Fantastic. So off we go. Actually, the hardest bit of this one was getting the slider to work in a sensible way. He said that, and it got down to 1 and then back up to 9 there. I think 1 minute would be the best. So this is just basically setting my number of minutes. So I hit the start timer, and now I can go back to, I can push through to whatever I like, and talk for about a minute or so. Crime in a multi-story car park. That's wrong on so many levels. Okay, moving on. And so in a minute or so's time, my reminder will fire, and I'll basically have the option to touch on the reminder and go back to my egg-ready thing. One of the nice things about the Windows 8 emulator is it gives you all the stuff which you get on the real phone. Previous emulations have only given you just the browser and nothing much else. But on this one, you get the whole thing, Kids Corner and the lot. And that's actually rather nice. It makes it fun to show the thing off. You could also, on the Windows phone, you can get screenshots on the device too, which is rather sweet, if anyone doesn't know that. If you hold down the start button and the press that one, you get a screenshot, which is quite cute. Has a minute gone by yet, do we think? It's funny how long a minute can be, isn't it, really? Of course, if the code's not working, how could you think such things wrong? Well, you see, my personal credibility. Oh, there you go. Thank you. Go nuts. So if I hit dismiss, it goes away forever. If I'd hit the actual top bit, I'd have gone back to my page. So let's just redo that again and go for even more applause next time. Why not? So if I drop back into here and set it for another one like that, fire it off again. Then if I clicked on the actual top of the thing, it takes me through to my egg ready page. So that's fundamentally how it all hangs together. These things are easy to make. and very easy to deploy, and kind of useful, which is kind of good. So here we go. No. How am I doing? Not too well. What am I doing? Where am I? Who moved my cheese? Oh, there he is. There's my friendly friend. There he is. I lost him for a minute. So he's basically, it's worked. It's all good. The universe is the correct shape. Everything's how it should be. And I'm kind of pleased. There's also a mechanism by which you can create... Oh, wow. What could that possibly mean? Let's go have a look. It's got the egg timer. So if I... No, come back. I want to catch you. Boink. Then I go to my egg ready page. So you can send your... You are so nice. That's lovely. So you can send the user to whatever page that you like straight out of your application. And you can fire off multiple ones. If you want to do this, you could have several of these different things out here. If I back out of there... One of the things you do need to bear in mind about this, if I go back, what's going to happen? Questions to the audience. If I go back, I'm going to go back to the start page or wherever I was before. One of the things you have to watch about this, and it's something which I've tripped up on myself in the past, and it's something that you need to be aware of, if you start messing around with the navigation stack, then be very, very careful about your user making assumptions about where they're going to go next when they press the back button. So if you do have a deep link in a timer or a navigation event or whatever to a page, try and do something which makes the back button behavior sensible. And one of the things that's kind of interesting, if you look at the way that applications are going a little bit now, it's deemed quite acceptable, I think, to have a home button in your app, which is interesting. There's a particular application I use. It's the Guardian newspaper. And normally speaking, I would expect to dive into things and then climb back out to the level by pressing back. But in the Guardian, that doesn't work, because if you hit their tile and then go through to the application from the tile, then when you go back, you go back to the tile. But they have a home button, so it doesn't matter. So you can now take your user back to your home page and then start navigating from there. So one of the things that you might want to... Yeah?
In this case, you didn't snooze or dismiss. You just went to this page.
Yes.
What happened to the snooze or dismiss? Did you make a choice?
That's a really good question. The question is, what I don't know how to question because I haven't had any questions yet. And the answer is that if you press snooze, if you press snooze or dismiss, then what's going to happen is...
What you just did, you went to a deep link,
mm-hmm.
You didn't press snooze or dismiss. So what happens to the alarm? Is it still there? Is it now snooze? Or?
If you dismiss, then the alarm is killed and you don't navigate to the page. If you snooze, the alarm will fire again in the future and you get to make the choice again. There's an implicit, I am acknowledging and cancelling the alarm action if you hit the link to go to the page. I mean, I don't particularly, if we're talking about UI design at this point, I don't particularly like the way it works because, as far as I'm concerned, I find it rather annoying that when the thing fires, there's no button that says, take me to the app. It's just if I touch the top bit, I end up going there. Does that make sense? Or have we managed to completely lose the entire audience in a single shot? If I start the timer is now running, I think. I'll fire it off. And we'll work through the scenario. But basically, if you hit the top one, you do the navigation, and that's the end of the alarm. Okay? If you hit the dismiss, you basically dismiss the alarm, but don't go to the application. And if you hit snooze, then you get 5 minutes grace, and the alarm will fire again, or however long the snooze is for. Yes. Yeah, the answer is that if you follow it through, then it won't appear again. But what I don't like is that, and we'll see it in a minute or two, when it pops up, it's not clear to me that you touched on that top bit to go to your app. It's just, there's not a button there, it's just you touch on the top bit and you go to your app, which is interesting. But the navigation issue is...
Also, did you click the start timer now twice? Did you now fire two
Micah, well, because they both got the same name, and because I check for an existing one and kill it, I think I do, then that means that when I make the second one, yeah, the second one will kill the first one. I can check the code. That's a really good question, actually, because I could set up 500 of these things. That'd be quite funny. The users would love it. And you haven't fired, actually, which is kind of worrying as well. No, why are you not firing? Let's look at the code. Oh, watch pots. So if I click up here, I'm going to go to the application. If I click dismiss, let's do a snooze for one day. I wanted a one-minute snooze, kind of a one-minute snooze. If I go 5 minutes, it'll fire again in 5 minutes, if we're still here then. But let's have a look at the code itself. Let's have a look actually in my lovely XAML, and then find the button. So there's the actual... Yeah, Robert, come on. Oh, dearie me. Must get some better glasses. So here we go. That was my fun and games with the slider. This is my load. This is my start button. And so, yeah, I'm being a bad boy, actually, because I'm effectively lobbing a new one in each time. But I am killing it first, so it's all right. Yes, I'm relaxed about that. But you could give them different names and then have a whole ton of the things. But, yeah, to go back to the original question, if you go to the app, you implicitly dismiss the alarm. And in 5 minutes or so time, that thing should then go again because we've actually held it off for that length of time. The whole issue of link navigation is really interesting and scary. The only thing I can give you which is solid advice is think about it really hard when you design the app. Don't try and retrofit it because that really hurts your head. You end up doing some fairly awful things. There are some nice tools that let you manage the back stack. And the other thing which you should be very careful to make sure, and again, check this out, you can get events fired on pages when the user effectively pulls your page off the back stack. If you think about the navigation stack is the thing that keeps track of what page I've got to and how I got there. And if I press back, it'll find the previous page on the stack and open it up if there is one, okay? But sometimes you might not want back to do that. You might want to do something else. So you can remove things from the back stack. If you start doing that, put in your page the event handler that fires when someone does that. Because if you've got any unnavigated from behavior that's important to keep the application tidy, then that won't get fired if they kill it off the back stack. So, yeah, it's one of these things that starts off being simple, but then the users make it complicated. Which is kind of what users are there for. And in 5 minutes or so time, this thing will go ping, and we'll have more on that one, I am sure. Audio playback agents, yes, we can create these. The unfortunate thing about audio playback is that you can't make an agent that will play back music content on the phone from the music library. If you write an XNA program, or a piece of Silverlight that has the XNA runtimes in it, then what you can do is you can actually start a media player off and play the music from the library, and that even includes downloaded content on your Zune Pass or whatever, which is kind of nice, or your Xbox Music Pass, as it's now called. If you add a background agent, then you can't play the phone content in the background, unfortunately. But what you can do, which is properly useful, is you can stream audio. So you can actually pull it off an MP3 stream or whatever, somewhere on the network, and bring that down. If you do that, then the mechanism is the same as for the other background tasks. You basically make yourself a background streaming agent, which you configure when it gets fired up. There's also a mechanism by which you can bind the playback controls to that, so you can skip tracks and pause and resume playback and bind delegates in your bit of code to actually fire when those things are pressed. And so if you want to do the audio playback in the background, that's all there for you as well. So quick review, or slow review, or whatever kind of... We've got to get that thing to fire, haven't we, at some point. We can make background processes. We can make tasks that run when the phone is able to run them or at periodic intervals. We can fire off these scheduled notifications. Notice that they don't run code. They just give the option to the user to actually fire our program, and our program can know that it's being hit from a scheduled notification because we can give a different URL to the event when the user dismisses the notification. And we can also create audio playback that runs alongside. Applications and their background processes can share data via the ISO store for the app. So basically, your background file transfers, your background programs will all run, and they can store stuff in there, and the foreground ones can pick it out. But you should design your application on the basis that the two may well be running at the same instant. So you must make sure that the behaviors are thread safe on that. In terms of debugging, there's my thing again. So I can make it go for another 5 minutes, or I can just hit there and drop through to my egg is now actually pretty hard boiled. Thinking about it, I'm reading a big number on that. And if I go back again, I go back to my previous page. So it behaves. I'd probably want to make that different, depending on what I want to do with the application. But to go back to the plot, when you can effectively debug these things really easily because it's all just the same application. It's all in Visual Studio. It's interesting that if you look at what's happening now, if you look at my program, it's not active. I'm just using the phone as a phone. I can start up, the calendar, and I can, if you look at Visual Studio still thinks it needs to be stopped. And that's the key. That's the difference that you get with Windows Phone 8. At the moment, if I had background tasks or stuff in here, I could put breakpoints in those and hit them when they got to run. Because as far as Studio is concerned, it's maintaining a connection to my phone and my application. And it won't break that connection until I do that and actually stop the code from running. That's kind of like weird, and it's different from Windows Phone 7. Windows Phone 7, when you had your app on screen and you were debugging it in the emulator and you hit back, then your app would stop and Studio would kick it out. In Windows Phone 8, that doesn't happen. If I start this thing up, I'll show you what I mean. Start this up, and so now I'm doing some more egg timing. If I hit back to leave the application and go back, look, my application's still running inside Studio. So what that means is that all my tasks and what have you, that's kind of freaked me out a bit to start with because the app wouldn't die. And so it's still in there. I can put my breakpoints into my background processes and all that kind of stuff, and they will fire when they run. So that's all fine and dandy. I'm going to go back there. So you can add these things. I think if you've got a Windows Phone app, I'm hoping that you walk away from this thinking, I could add some background behavior to that. I could add value. I could make it remind my users to do stuff. I could actually add some interesting icing. But remember, it's icing. It's not the cake, this, because users might turn it off, or they might have too many of these things. My experience with using the phone is that I've got lots of apps that run background stuff, and I haven't had any kind of performance issues at all. And the battery life's been okay as well. But people do kill things, and so you mustn't make it part of the core behavior. But that's pretty much it. Does anyone have any questions? Was that useful? Are you all enthused? I was enthused once. The question is, can we go for 2 weeks? I don't see why not. You see here, I'm adding a time span to the begin time, and I'm actually stop the code so I can use my IntelliSense. So I can put a time span on there, so anything which I can, if you really want to make it go in 3 or 4 weeks, then absolutely you can do that. You can also, we've got end of month, monthly, non, weekly, or yearly. So you can do birthday. I mean, end of month is kind of nice because that's one of these really hard sums to do to figure out when it needs to go. So you've got some quite nice options here in terms of actually when it fires. And this is basically a time span. So you could make it a week, a month, whatever, if you like. It's not like a background task that expires after 2 weeks. You can make it as you like. Yep. Does that make sense?
But this will be invisible for the user. So we won't notice there is a set alarm.
it doesn't show up as an alarm that the user can actually find. Your application can find it because it can go through and look at all the particular alarms set for that app. You can't see other people's apps because all the apps are sandboxed. So you, when they fire your program up, it could tell you you have an alarm set. If they do a hard reset on the phone, it's going to go away as well. But if you uninstall the app, it's going to go then as well. Because it has to go, because the system wouldn't have anywhere to go back to if they hit the link. So these things are on a per app basis. They're not managed. They're actually managed by the system. Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's quite... That's what you would want. There's no need to way of doing it than that. Yep.
So if you want to, you can set a background timer from of a year. And if you want to... rewatch your user for using your app for a year, then you can upgrade. After a year, pop-up comes, now you can upgrade.
Yes. Ish. I'm just thinking, have I ever actually owned the same phone for a year? But that might just be me. If they get a different
just
phone, I mean, it's I don't know how they've tested it. But I mean, technically, yes. I wouldn't do that. If I wanted to do that, I'd basically shove it in ISO store when they did it, and I'd check every day or every week. I'd have one that fires. But do remember that what's happening here is, when you have the alarm fired, it doesn't do anything. It just comes up and says, well done, you have, you know, my app's still on your phone after a year. Thank you very much. Click here to go to my app again. So you could have like a reward thing out in the future, but you're relying on the user to actually touch that at the top and follow your link back into your app. So you could kind of reward people for having it still there, but your code never gets control unless the user actually lets them go through. But I mean, you couldn't really use a background task to do that, because if they don't use it after 2 weeks, the background task gets killed. So your reminder would be a way of saying, hey, I'm still here after a month. There's no reason why you couldn't have a thing that pops up and says, hey, you've not played my game in a while. Fancy having another go? Now, that's a really difficult line to tread, because you might well upset the users more than anything else. But if it's something that... if you want to make an app that reminds folk of their subscriptions and stuff and does it in a quick and dirty way without making appointments, because you can't easily make appointments using the current version of the phone software, then this is a way around that. You can say, hey, your gas bill is due in whatever, and then wind it forward to then. As long as the user plays nice, you'll be fine. Yeah, sorry.
If the reminder, it cannot execute code.
No.
What if you want to execute something every 15 minutes to check a status on the site?
Then what you'd have to do is basically a periodic task and then hope for the best. But like I said, it's reasonable to hope for the best, because this is a piece of icing. So if you wanted to go on there and pick the latest artwork so that your tile on the desktop changed every 15 minutes to give users something to sort of follow through, new offers, new deals, new stuff coming into stock, then that's a nice thing to do that adds value, but it isn't a piece of core business behavior. And if you keep that mindset for your periodic tasks, you'll be absolutely fine. That's what they're there for.
But you can set it to 15 minutes or
5 minutes? No, you can't. Your periodic tasks get control when the phone's in a position to give it to them, which basically means... you get a few seconds every half an hour or so. And if there's lots of other applications also wanting to use that, maybe you'll get less. I mean, you can, of course, you can put timestamps in ISO store so you can tell how long it was since you were last run. So there's no reason why the background agent can't track when it has had access to the system. And it will be interesting to write an app. In fact, I'm going to go away now and do that. I'm going to write one that just does that and profiles my phone in terms of how much time it actually gets, and then load it up and see what happens and make a blog post out of it. It might kind of like a fun thing to do. But the bottom line is, you don't know. If the user fires up a game and just starts playing the game for several hours or whatever, then you might not get a look in.
Yep.
Question is, what happens to a reminder if the phone's turned off when the reminder fires? That is such a good question, and I don't know the answer. I'm going to have, that's another blog post. That's good. That's two blog posts out of one session. Now, I'll play with that. One of the annoying things about toasts is that they're not persistent. Tiles, yes, you can have a persistent element that the user can see. Toasts, not. Reminders, I don't know. I'll have to try that. That's a really good one. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Sorry. Yes? WhatsApp, yeah, I suspect they'd be using stuff that we mortals aren't allowed access to, for want of a better way of putting it. What I've told you is basically how the phone works at the moment if you're at the developer level that I'm at, but it might be that other companies, I mean, the Skype app does something broadly similar, although not terrible, because it can clobber your battery, or the early versions of that tended to. But what I'm telling you is basically what everyone in this room can do, if that makes sense. And for that, I apologize. Okay? And it's always good to end on an apology. I've been doing it for years. Served me well. But I will, that one about what happens to the phone, I'm going to check that. I'm going to find that out. That's really good. So thank you very much for being a great audience. And I'm back in about an hour's time with gadgets and printed cases and stuff. And so thank you very much.